Methodology Minutes is brought to you by the Methodology Center at Penn State, your source for cutting-edge research methodology in the social, behavioral, and health sciences.
Hello, I'm Linda Collins from the Methodology Center at Penn State.
Hello, I'm Michael Cleveland, also from the Methodology Center at Penn State, and I'd like to welcome you to Methodology Minutes. First, I want to give the listener just a little bit of an overview of what we're going to be talking about today. I should mention first that this podcast series is a companion to our newsletter, which is published every fall and spring semester and a very popular component of our Methodology Center outreach. And first, we'll be talking a little bit about the background of the Methodology Center, its mission, and a little bit of the history of the center. We'll also talk about what types of research we do. We'll talk a little bit about the training and the mentoring that center scientists do, finishing up with some discussion of our dissemination activities here at the Methodology Center. One of those main activities, and the reason that we're here today, is that we have decided to introduce the podcast series as a kind of a new and fun way to introduce ourselves to the listening audience. So with that, I will turn it over to Linda again.
Okay, thank you, Michael. So a little bit of background about the Methodology Center. We are at Penn State University in State College, Pennsylvania, and also the University of Michigan. And here at Penn State, we're in the College of Health and Human Development, although we want to stress that we're an interdisciplinary center. We also have involvement from scientists in other colleges. Our overarching mission is the advancement and dissemination of methodology.
And that brings up a good question, I think, Linda. What do you mean by methodology?
Yeah, that is a great question. By methodology, we mean every quantitative aspect of research methods. This includes data analysis and research design, which are usually included under the general heading of statistics, but also some areas that are a little bit outside of traditional statistics, such as measurement, latent variable models, and cost-effectiveness analysis.
And how does that make us different from a stat department,
would you say? We're really pretty different from a stat department. First of all, we're interdisciplinary. Statistics, the discipline of statistics, has an important presence in the center, a very important presence. But there's other disciplines present, too. And if you take a look at our website and our publication list, you'll see that there's a lot of cross-disciplinary collaboration. The interdisciplinary group of scientists that makes up the center meets as a group roughly 30 times a year to discuss research. So even those of us who aren't directly collaborating with each other influence each other's work all the time. I think another point to make, another reason why we're different from a traditional statistics department, is we focus on methodology for applications in the social, behavioral, and health sciences. In fact, there are people here doing theoretical work in statistics, but even that more theoretical work is inspired by these applications. In most statistics departments, there are other application areas besides the social, behavioral, and health sciences, areas such as environmental statistics, spatial statistics, astrostatistics, engineering statistics. We frequently borrow from these other areas within statistics, but we don't really work on applications for those domains. We're really focused on applications in the social, behavioral, and health sciences. I think another difference is in where we publish. Although we do publish in statistics journals, such as the Journal of the American Statistical Association and the Annals of Statistics, we also disseminate our work in other ways by publishing in methodological journals aimed at the social, behavioral, and health sciences. For example, psychological methods, statistics, and medicine. Those are examples of more methodologically focused as opposed to purely statistically focused journals that are outlets for us. And we also publish in more content-oriented journals, journals like Prevention Science, Drug and Alcohol Dependence, Neuropsychopharmacology. Those are examples of journals where we've published methodological pieces that are aimed primarily at a substantive audience.
When you mentioned all these articles that have been published in these various journals, I was kind of curious what you mean by methodological research as opposed to methodological support.
Yeah. Now, a lot of people, when they hear the name Methodology Center, automatically assume that we offer methodological support. For example, walk-up consulting hours or the possibility of writing us into a grant to handle data collection and data analysis for a big project. That kind of support is really important, but there are other units at Penn State who provide it and provide it very, very well. That's not what we do. We do original research and methodology, developing new methods, improving existing methods, importing and adapting methods from other fields that can be useful in the behavioral sciences. So that's what our funding is for, not for providing statistical and methodological support. Now, although we do not provide ad hoc consulting, we love to engage in collaborations with behavioral scientists on projects that make both a substantive and a methodological contribution, ideally.
I think I'd like to move next and talk a little bit about the history of the Methodology Center. Just real briefly mention some important highlights that have taken place in the past several years, starting first with the idea that the first P50 Center grant was funded by the National Institute on Drug Abuse in 1996. And although the personnel have changed over the years, Linda Collins, you have always been the center director. And another important fact in regard to the history is that Susan Murphy at the University of Michigan was one of the original principal investigators for that first center grant.
Right, and Susan was at Penn State at that time. She's at the University of Michigan now, mm-hmm. and she remains one of the principal investigators on our center grant, still very involved in mm-hmm. the center. And in fact, the activity at the University of Michigan in regard to the center has grown over the years.
Mm-hmm. And since that time, since 1996, the center has had two successful renewals of that grant, and right now currently undergoing, or has in the past, I guess, semester undergone a third competitive renewal, which, as we all are aware, was a very intensive process.
Yes. Yes, center grants are a really big, intensive process. That's a good way to put it. But that was submitted, and we're awaiting review now. I want to mention our program officials over the years. Oh, and I should say the National Institute on Drug Abuse, that's a bit of a mouthful, so most people call it NIDA. I think we can refer to it as NIDA from now on. We're funded by the Prevention Research Branch of the Division of Epidemiology Services and Prevention Research. We have been so lucky over the years with the program officials we've been able to work with. Wilson Compton currently is the division director. Liz Genexi is our current program official. We had previously Larry Seitz as a program official. He's now retired. He was really great. And Liz Robertson was our program official for a while. She is now the branch chief and handed us over to the able hands of Liz Genexi. Most of the support for the Methodology Center comes from the P50 grant from NIDA that Michael referred to a minute ago. There are other grants in the center, other grants from NIDA, some grants from the National Science Foundation, and there's a couple of grants from the NIH Roadmap Initiative. These grants are all to support our original research and methodology. We also get some funding for kind of our basic infrastructure from the College of Health and Human Development. The dean of our college is currently Nan Crowder. The Associate Dean for Research is Neil Sharkey, and they've been wonderfully supportive of the center. It's really just a great environment to be in. And I also would like to mention our partnership with the Prevention Research Center, which is directed by Mark Greenberg. The two centers do a lot of things together. We have a training grant together, which we'll talk about a little bit. And there's a lot of projects that involve personnel from both centers. It's been a very, very productive and enjoyable collaborative process over the years.
I think that's a nice segue to start talking a little bit about who actually works here in the center. Currently, the Methodology Center is home to more than 20 PhD investigators and 12 graduate students. And all these scientists come from a variety of academic backgrounds. Those include statistics, human development and family studies, communication, arts and sciences, health policy and administration, and psychology.
So now it would be great, I think, to give some examples of the research that people do. And Michael, why don't you start with yours? That would be
sure.
a great place to start.
Very good. So my research, I'm interested in identifying the mechanisms through which social contextual conditions influence adolescent substance use and abuse. For example, I'm very interested in how neighborhood processes such as social cohesion and social disorganization interact with more proximal factors like interpersonal relationships between family members and other close ties to produce differential trajectories of risk for adolescents. Methodologically, these types of questions obviously require multi-level approaches that can account for that clustering or nested structure of the data. So recently, I have become interested in integrating my interests in multi-level modeling and epidemiologic methods with my interests in subgroup analytic approaches, such as latent class analysis. And of course, my ultimate goal is to understand why certain communities are characterized by different levels of risk and protection, and then use this information to help guide the development of more efficient and integrated interventions that ultimately will be the most efficient ways to intervene and prevent substance use.
That is so important. I think that multi-level approach is getting a lot of attention now, and it's about time. So I think you're in the right place at the right time.
Thanks.
So I guess I'll jump in now and talk about what I've been doing. I'm involved in a number of different funded research projects. I have a component in our current P50 grant where I'm working on developing a phased experimental approach for optimizing behavioral interventions. You'll hear a little bit more about this in a future podcast, but just for right now, I'll say that we usually evaluate interventions as a package, and we rarely stop to think, maybe this intervention has been shown to have a statistically significant effect, maybe it hasn't, but is the intervention's effect as large as it can be? In other words, have we taken steps to optimize the intervention? Another project that I'm involved in, I'm very excited about, is the optimization of a smoking cessation intervention. I'm one of the investigators on a center grant that's funded by the National Cancer Institute, NCI. The principal investigators are Tim Baker and Mike Fiore of the Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention at the University of Wisconsin in Madison, and the study is taking place there. The idea is to use a phased experimental approach to optimize their clinic-based intervention for smoking cessation.
So another center scientist that we want to just briefly introduce among the many other scientists here is Donna Kaufman. Donna is another research associate in the Methodology Center who, like me, was a PAMPT postdoctoral trainee, which we will talk a little bit about the PAMPT program in just a little bit. Donna recently received funding from NIDA for an RO3 project to investigate methods for assessing causal inference and causal mediational processes in prevention programs, particularly when individuals are not randomly assigned to treatment or they're only pseudo randomly assigned. And this is the case in many prevention programs, which are usually designed to target mediating variables such as the perceptions of alcohol use or perceptions of alcohol use norms, rather than the ultimate outcome such as substance use itself. Donna is one of the project directors for the most recent P50 application that you just mentioned, and she will continue this line of research by taking recent developments from the theoretical statistics literature and concerning these causal inferences and adapting them for use in substance use prevention and treatment research.
And that is so important because a lot of the literature on causal inference is very technical.
Right.
And it just isn't getting out there to people who can really use it.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the main points of Donna's research is to ultimately develop these methods and bring them into the hands of substance use and intervention scientists.
Mm-hmm. Yes, very important. The next scientist that we want to talk about is Dr. Runzi Lee, who's a professor of statistics and one of the project directors on our P50. And Runzi, I want to apologize in advance. I know I'm not going to do justice to your work in this little summary, but I did want people to get a little sense of what you're doing. Runzi works in a number of different areas, and here I'm going to talk briefly about his work in functional data analysis for modeling intensive longitudinal data. Intensive longitudinal data is longitudinal data with many observations. For example, nowadays it's getting very easy to collect such data with wearable devices that might, for example, give an almost constant feed of an individual's activity level. There are also diary methods of data collection using handheld computers. People, especially with college students, it seems, are collecting data more and more using the internet. And also there are more and more what we've started calling mature longitudinal studies. These are sort of standard longitudinal studies that have been out in the field long enough that they might have, you know, 12, 15, 20 observations in time. These kinds of data collection approaches often require new ways of analyzing data. In fact, it can be very challenging to analyze this kind of data. Runze has been a pioneer in the use of functional data analysis for modeling intensive longitudinal data. By using functional data analysis, you can model data in which change is not a simple functional form. So maybe it's not just, well, not a straight line, but also maybe not even quadratic or cubic, something that has a lot of ups and downs in it. So in Runze's component of our current P50, he's working on models that include not only time-varying covariates, but time-varying effects, so that the relation between two variables itself can change over time. For example, he's shown that the relation between mood and urge to smoke varies as a function of number of days post-quit in smokers. Runze also has an R21 funded by the NIH roadmap, and there are two principal investigators on that. One is Runze, the other is Dr. Lisa Durker, who's at Wesleyan University. And they're working on using functional data analysis combined with mixture model approaches to identify subgroups of individuals showing different complex patterns of change over time. Now, there's other people doing lots of interesting stuff in the Methodology Center, and we hate to leave them out, but we could go on, and this podcast would potentially get very long. And in future podcasts, we hope to be talking with some of these folks, say Stephanie Lanza, Susan Murphy, and others who are doing really interesting work in the center.
I want to next talk a little bit about the training that is done here at the center. One of our things we've mentioned a few times is that one of the primary missions of the Methodology Center is to grow the next generation of prevention and treatment methodologists. And to date, the Methodology Center has trained more than 30 pre-doc and postdocs who have worked closely with center scientists on a wide range of methodological research questions. Many of these trainees have been hired to work directly with the center scientists on specific research projects. However, a significant number of these trainees have come to work specifically or be involved with the NIDA-funded PAMPT program. PAMPT is an acronym that we use that stands for Prevention and Methodology Training Program. The PAMPT program has been funded since 2005 and is a joint endeavor of the Methodology Center and, as you mentioned earlier, Dr. Mark Greenberg's Prevention Research Center. Its purpose is to train both pre- and postdocs in the integration of prevention science and quantitative methodology.
Yeah, and at some future time, I hope we'll do a podcast just about the PAMPT.
Right. I think that would be a really nice feature.
And you were a PAMPT trainee, weren't you?
I was, yes. I myself was, and as we mentioned, Dr. Donna Kaufman was another PAMPT trainee.
Another aspect of training in the Methodology Center is graduate courses. We organize one-credit graduate courses, usually in the spring semester. Each one is 5 weeks long. That gives us the opportunity to fit three in a semester. And each one is an advanced introduction to some methodological topic. So a few examples. Stephanie Lanza and I taught one on latent class and latent transition analysis. Donna Kaufman taught one on causal inference. And Dr. John Graham, who is a professor in the Department of Biobehavioral Health, gave a one-credit course on missing data.
Another important mission of the Methodology Center is dissemination of our work to scientists around the U.S. and indeed around the world. We've worked very hard to develop many ways to place the results of our research into the hands of those devoted to both substance use prevention, HIV prevention, and other treatment methodologies. These include, of course, graduate students and experienced scientists alike.
Yeah, one important dissemination method for us is software. There are several software programs that are available for free download from our website. You do have to register, but registration doesn't cost anything, and once you've registered, downloading doesn't cost anything. We just need to keep track of who gets our software so that when there are updates, we can notify people. So some of the programs that are currently available are some SAS procs, PROC LCA and PROC LTA. Those are SAS procs that enable people to do latent class and latent transition analysis. There's a PROC SCAD LS. This is a procedure for doing variable selection in regression. And there are some SAS macros for functional data analysis. These would be very handy for people with intensive longitudinal data.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to real quickly interrupt and ask, you mentioned a lot of these programs are SAS procs or in SAS. Is everything in SAS only?
Yeah, that's a great question. For right now, everything pretty much is in SAS with the exception of one or two Fortran programs. But we are in the process of branching out. We're hoping to eventually make packages that are available for R and for Stata, so stay tuned for those.
Well, I want to get back to the topic of dissemination, and one of our primary vehicles for dissemination that a lot of people probably have heard about is the annual Summer Institute on Longitudinal Methods. Each year, about 40 substance use scientists participate in this very hands-on workshop, and they get a real chance to very closely interact with leading experts in longitudinal research questions.
The first Summer Institute was held in June 1996. I had to look that up, and it's hard to believe it was that long ago.
Mm-hmm.
So we've had quite a few of them now. Examples of Summer Institutes, a few past ones have been methods for categorical data. That was me speaking and also David Rinskoff from the City University of New York. Structural equation modeling, Jack McArdle and Mike Neal. The Moutains came, Bengt and Linda Moutain, and did one on longitudinal modeling using M+. Judy Singer and John Willett did one on modeling change and event occurrence. And Daniel Nagin came and did a Summer Institute on analyzing developmental trajectories.
Mm-hmm. And what's the upcoming one for this summer?
Yes, the Summer Institute this summer, I think, is going to be really good. It's Niall Bolger and Jean-Philippe Lorenzo, and the topic is analysis of longitudinal dyadic data. They've been doing some really interesting work in that area. It's an important area, tough to analyze dyadic data, so I think it's going to be a really interesting and well-received Summer Institute.
Yes, I totally agree with that. I think a lot of people will be very excited to have some very close and hands-on opportunities to work with those researchers. That's a really important topic, so glad to see that. We're also very excited about disseminating our work through the web and other latest social media outlets, including our website. You can find us, the Methodology Center, at methodology.psu.edu. And from there, from our website, you can sign up to kind of keep abreast of latest publications and other news. And there's even icons on that website that you can click, and you can become a fan of the Methodology Center on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter if you have that capability and are into tweeting. And I also finally want to mention that twice a year we publish a newsletter called the Methodology Center Perspective. This is kind of the traditional method of dissemination. It's a hard copy. And these podcasts are meant to be a companion to that newsletter. Our goal is to eventually integrate these two dissemination activities in the future. So hopefully soon, those interested readers of the newsletter will be able to listen to these podcasts that will eventually feature content that we just can't quite include in the printed version.
Yeah, we're really excited about the podcast, and maybe this makes us weird, but we think we think methodology is fun. We're planning to have fun with these podcasts, and we want other people to have fun with them too. We think podcasts are a great outlet for certain types of information. Now, we are making this up as we go along a little bit. Nothing that we're doing is set in stone. We anticipate that the podcasts will include several different themes. One possibility is discussions with experts about various issues that come up in the field. It may be that an expert has something that he or she really wants to say about something, and a podcast potentially can be a great way to make a statement that it's difficult to make in a traditional journal article.
And of course, we'll also highlight any new exciting research by center scientists or by our close friends.
A few upcoming podcasts will be Stephanie and I will be talking about the new book that I mentioned. Daniel Rivera from ASU is going to be visiting in March, and we're hoping that he will do a podcast about our work together. And we're hoping to have John Graham on modern missing data methods.
Well, Linda, I think we really have covered a lot of ground here today, and I think introduced some really exciting topics and ideas for the future. I hope our audience has also been excited about the possibilities that this presents to us, and I just want to thank everyone for spending the time with us today.
Yes, thank you. It's been great to be with you, and we look forward to our next podcast.
You have been listening to Methodology Minutes, brought to you by the Methodology Center at Penn State, your source for cutting-edge research methodology in the social, behavioral, and health sciences. This podcast is available on iTunes and at methodology.psu.edu.